Archives for the 21st Century in Your Region. The Challenge We Must Meet. Presented by David Ruse. This event was recorded live on the 23rd of June 2010 as part of the Archives for the 21st Century in Your Region conference.
It was just outlined there. In fact, it's kind of half of what I was going to say to you. But maybe what I'm going to do is give you it from the sharp end, as Sue says. I mean, I am a director of libraries and culture. I work for Westminster City Council. I've been there for quite a number of years. So I'm a chief officer within that council. I sit on its senior leadership team, and it's tough. Everybody has this impression that Westminster is a very rich, wealthy place. Yes, it is. There are lots of rich and wealthy people that live there, but the council has the second lowest council tax in the country and delivers excellent services. And it's very hardline, Conservative-controlled council, still Conservative-controlled after the election. Every penny that we spend, I have to fight for very, very hard. It ain't easy. It's a very tough environment. And I'm very proud to work there with a great team of people. We have a fantastic archive service. They're worth every penny and more, but it's hard work to keep them in that position. And some of what I want to share with you is how we've managed to get there and maybe some lessons or some ideas that you can develop and use locally. I'm intrigued by this setting. I mean, we can do some dissection later. Here I see, but I also notice there's a charm bar. I love the notion of a charm bar. I think it's just what they call the student bar or something, but obviously it's posh because this is the medical and science facility. So if we really get desperate, we can all adjourn to the charm bar. But equally, I noticed one of the exhibits that were brought in this morning, I think by you from the National Railway Museum, talked about, what was it, conducted rambles. And I think what I want to do is take you on a conducted ramble around this landscape that we're in at the moment. And I'm going to take my glasses off because I broke my glasses at the weekend. So these are old glasses and I've got a choice of either being able to see your faces to know whether you're actually listening to me or read me notes. And I'll stick to the notes and you can nod off now and I won't notice. Really what I'm going to talk about are four themes. Sue had three, I've got four. And the first of those is about relevance. And yep, there's no money. I brought with me last night's Evening Standard. Brilliant headline. You recognise this? This is the world we're in now, isn't it? Tax and axe. It's going to be very, very tough. There's no doubt about that. And my chief executive and my director of finance are just going to be saying, there's no money, David. You know, what are we going to do? There's no money left. And there isn't. There quite simply isn't. Not only is there no money left, the money that we've got is disappearing. Because of all sorts of reasons that will be familiar to you locally in your organisations that are familiar to me in my organisation. There simply isn't any money. So what is a chief exec and a director of finance to do? And the last thing they're going to do is give a load of money to archives. Because why would they? What relevance does archives have? Because all you're doing is storing a load of old documents. Nobody looks at most of them. It's very expensive. Why should I bother? I've got much more pressing things on my agenda. And so do I. As a director, I've got more pressing things on my agenda as well, because I've got a £12 million budget to protect, not just the archives bit of that. So how are we going to do that? Oh yeah, I know what we do. We play the statutory card. Well, we've got to keep the council's records. You know, it's a statutory duty. Who cares? They don't care. They're not interested because there's no money. So how are you going to make yourself relevant? How are you going to get into a conversation, a sensible conversation, with directors of finance, directors of archives or libraries or culture, whatever the construct is in your organisation? How are you going to have a sensible discussion that actually allows you to showcase and celebrate what you can actually do in this environment that we're in? What those directors are all thinking about is, what can they stop doing? What can they cut? Where can they save? What can they decommission, if that's the language that they use? How can they do that safely without causing riots in the streets or mayhem or children dying or older people dying? How can they make those cuts and savings? 25% over the next 4 years, at least. And that isn't going to be a uniform salami slice. And already chief executives and directors of finance have been saying that cultural services are likely to be hit more than some of the other service areas. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do to make ourselves more relevant? What will get the chief exec's attention? What will get the vice chancellor's attention? Any ideas? You'd have to shout because I can't see if you're putting your hand up. Come on, it's interactive. Come on. No, nobody's got any ideas. Oh, great. Well, how much saving can we make? We can cut the lot of you. What's going to get their attention? You must have some ideas, please.
Saving money.
Saving money, right. So you're going to cut some of your services. Great. Okay, yeah. I'll buy that. Yeah, give me more. And you're going to save money. Right, yep.
My vice-chancellor will not be interested in saving money. He'll be interested in what research projects we are going to go into partnership with in order to get large sums of money.
Right.
Making
money, yeah, good one, like that. And also some reputational benefits for the institution as well in terms of getting new research funding in, yeah, good. So you've got to be able to answer that question very, very quickly now, because if you can't, you're doomed, you're really doomed. So it is thinking about, in their shoes, what's keeping them awake at night? What is it that you could make a difference to? They don't care about your service. I mean, it's interesting, the research that Sue referred to, where the chief execs could articulate the value and potential benefit of service, but they don't actually care about it because they've got 10 million other things to care about that are life and death, literally. So you've got to get your passion and enthusiasm for the service into their language and on their desk. And that's what I think is absolutely critical for you to do. And it is about identifying the corporate priorities of the institution. They're not interested in archives. What they are interested in is the quality of life of older people. They're interested in positive achievement and activities for young people. They're interested in the skills and economic development agenda and how they can do all of that more cheaply. How they can do all of that more cheaply. I know how they can do that more cheaply. Take all the money away from social services and give it to cultural services, because we are a preventative service. Take some of the money away. Take a small percentage of the money away from those departments and give it to cultural services, and we would make a huge difference. You know that. You've got to persuade your chief executives and directors that that's the case. So you're going to need to argue that case very hard. They're interested in big society, and I'm looking forward to the MLA's interpretation of big society. I don't think the government quite knows what it means yet. Interestingly, the person behind it at government, the Minister Greg Clark, was my portfolio holder 2 terms ago. He was a councillor in the City of Westminster. Yes, we'll pass over that. But he's the architect of big society. I think it's a lot about community engagement. It's about community involvement. Who employs more volunteers or uses more volunteers than most other council services? You do. Okay. Does everybody know that? I doubt it. Who is working closely with communities and collecting community archives and getting the communities to collect their own archives? You do. That's what big society is about, or one manifestation of it. So you really need to exploit that. Those are the sorts of things that are going to attract a chief exec's attention. They're not interested in archives. They're not interested in your storage problems or your cataloguing backlog or your statutory duty. It just doesn't cut the mustard at this time. So it's really a question of rethinking everything you do, refocusing it, reprioritising it. You have got to stop doing some of your favourite things and start doing some of the things that are of interest to your organisation, because that is the only way you're going to survive. It's about ruthless, and I mean ruthless, prioritisation. It's focusing on those corporate priorities with real activities and real projects. Pet projects have to go. I think I put there, put the hobby horses out to grass. You have to do that. And I know that all of you have, either you yourselves or your staff, have hobby horses. They just love doing it. They haven't got the time and you haven't got the money. You need to stop doing those things. You can always come back to them in good times, but at the moment it's about refocusing and reprioritising. And you will get credit for doing that, for refocusing and reprioritising, if you can demonstrate that you've stopped doing some things in order to focus on the organisation's wider priorities. Now, you've got a fantastic array of tools at your disposal in doing this. I mean, the first thing you've got is the material that you keep. I mean, it is incredibly visual and engaging for the most part. I mean, just look at some of the items that have been brought in this morning. They're very, very powerful advocates for you. They're silent. You have to bring them out. I had a fantastic discussion with the Westminster senior leadership team, which is the top sort of 30 managers. And we were having this incredibly archaic discussion about electronic social care records and the problems with the IT and, you know, all the rest of it. And I took along to that meeting a settlement examination from St Martin's in the Fields in Westminster from 1780 something. And I just, very unwisely probably, and with my archivists growling at me in the background, passed this around the room just to let them look at an 18th century social care record. And it absolutely fascinated every single person in that room. And they said they now understood, A, why we were concerned about keeping electronic social care records, what we did with them once the live case had gone, but B, they had no idea of the richness of information that we had in the archives. All I had to do was pass the blooming thing round the table, and I'd won the argument. And since then, we've had numerous inquiries from different members of the senior leadership team about different activities that they've been involved with. One just last week about a resident who was complaining about a right of way that came from the river straight through the Houses of Parliament and wanted to know why that right of way was not still there and why they couldn't basically walk through Parliament, because it was a very, 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 very old right of way. The Department of Transport didn't know the answer, but the Archive Service did. And they've done a beautifully researched answer, which we're going to charge the Transport Department for. They're realising the value of what we hold, and that's really important. Street names. I don't know whether you've seen the controversy there's been about the spelling of street names in different parts of the country and the waste. Who holds the records of what streets were originally called? We do. So again, the value that we're adding in actually saying, no, that is the correct spelling. It does have an S apostrophe as opposed to an apostrophe S, or whatever it might be. That's what it was originally set at. You need to remember those sorts of examples and use them and use your own collection to that effect. Visually, it's very exciting, very engaging, and it will make a difference. Customers, you need to talk to them more, you need to listen to them, and you need to use them. They are also your best advocates and champions. You know, your customers are critical, assuming you've got some. I don't know how many customers you all have, and I don't know what the breadth and range of them are. Are they all sort of white, middle class, you know, reasonably well off, maybe sort of older ladies who like to do, I don't know. Do your users represent the full range of your communities? And if not, why not? Because they jolly well should. And you need to be reaching out to those. Because if you can demonstrate that you're reaching out to all parts of the community, that you are including people who are otherwise excluded, that you are dealing with people who are on the council's priority list because they're either, you know, deprived or they're excluded or they're unemployed or whatever. If you can demonstrate the difference you're making to them, that is going to give you a lot of credits with directors and chief executives in these difficult times. The TV is doing quite a lot of favours for us, isn't it? I mean, the whole family history thing, we all seen the TV programmes, but also the advertising now from some of the big companies like Ancestry and so on, really pushing the family history side of things. Use that, exploit that locally, but also the sense of place and place history is really important as we go forward. It's all part of big society. The heritage value that we have in our holdings to talk about the history of places and communities is absolutely critical. And to be creating the contemporary record of the current history of our places. Because we are not only the guardians of the past, but we are also the people who should be collecting the today for the tomorrow. Nobody else is going to do it. It's our job. So there's a role for us in working with the planning department and with other departments of the council to make sure that our role is recognised in that we are creating tomorrow's history. and tomorrow's records for the researchers of tomorrow. And that really brings me to the notion of partnership. And partnership should be happening at all sorts of levels. It's partnering with the youth service and with schools and with children, partnering with adult social services, partnering with planning departments, with the transport department, partnering with anybody if it's going to help you demonstrate your corporate contribution, your relevance in the environment that we're in. But there's also getting your partners to work together, because you could actually be a broker of different partnerships. Not the person at the centre, just as Sue says, but a broker that can actually create something new. And the notion of intergenerational projects, I mean, getting the youth service to talk to the adult service in most local authorities, getting the youth service to talk to anybody in most local authorities is a real challenge. But archive services could do that, and do that. We've certainly done it. We've been very successful with the lottery. We get loads of money from the lottery, it seems. I don't know, somebody's got the right numbers on the ticket, but we've got a project at the moment called the West End at War, and there's a very large intergenerational element to that, where we've got older people telling the stories of what it was like to live in Soho in the war, to young people who are animating their stories into a play through our arts team that's being performed in residential care homes around the city. It's a fantastic piece of work. We got the money, we created the partnership, we are reflecting in the glory of that project, but it's not an archives project as such. It's a much broader project that is touching so many corporate priorities. And the trick for me is to make sure that the chief exec and all the others know that it's initiated in archives. That's what we do. So you really do need to exploit your assets. I'm going to go on to talk a bit about leadership and advocacy. And I was going to quote my friend Roy Clare, who once said, "You are the cavalry that you have been waiting for." He was talking in a library context, I think, at that time. And I think the same is absolutely true in the context of archives. So you are the leader in this context. No one else is going to lead your service because they're all busy protecting their own or dealing with big problems. So you have got to rise to this challenge. Nobody else will do it for you. And those of you that aren't heads of service, and I know some of you perhaps not heads of service, that does not mean it's somebody else, because you're the person that's here. You are the leader in this context. You have got to take action following this meeting and every day, because you want all of your staff to actually be leaders. One of the ways you do that is to be visible. Be visible and vocal. You need to get out of the archives. I've worked with some authorities where if you wanted to see the archivist, you had to sort of go down to the basement, through six security doors, knock three times, hope it was a Wednesday afternoon, and with a bit of luck, they might be able to give you half an hour of their very important time instead of listing and things like that. It's really critical that you're not tied to the actual point of service delivery. You've got to get out and about in the organisation and be visible. But it's no good just being visible, you've got to be vocal. You know, don't go to meetings and don't say anything, because nobody will know you're there. Or worse, they'll think, why did that person come to that meeting and not say a word? What a waste of time. We can make some cuts there. So if you're going to go to a meeting or be involved in some sort of working group, it's really important that you say something, hopefully something sensible or memorable, but say something, be vocal, be visible, because you are representing your service. And it's about having ideas, having solutions, having projects up your sleeve that you can just come out with just like that. I think that echoes as well something that Sue was saying. You know, we've got to be immediately able to advocate for this service. Volunteering to be on working groups, or if there's a project that's being talked about in another department, say, hey, we could help with that. I will send someone to that, or I will be on that group. I will help. Don't wait to be asked, because no one's going to ask you, because they don't know you're there and they don't know what contribution you might make. And this need for immediacy is so important now. You know, it's no good saying, well, we'll go away and we'll have a think about that and we'll come back to you in, 6 weeks maybe? No, if you can't decide now, the moment has gone. I use an analogy sometimes that City Hall is a 19-storey tower block in Westminster, and I spend most of my time in the lifts. And it's amazing who gets on and off at all the different floors as you're trying to get to meetings and things like that. When you are standing in a lift or in a, walking along a corridor and the chief exec happens to come out of their office and she says to you, who are you? And you say, oh, I'm the archivist. What are you going to say then in that sort of 30 seconds or that minute you've got with the chief executive? Have you got that story or that anecdote or that idea that she's going to go into her next meeting and think, that was really interesting. I've never met that person before. I'll follow that up. Have that 1 minute conversation in your head, because saying, oh, damn, I wish I'd said that to her, is too late. The moment has gone. So it is really about, you know, doing it now. You've got lots of champions. You know, chief executives actually can see it. They just need triggering. You've got the volunteers that you work with. They love you. People vote for them. I mean, they vote for your councillors, you know, so you need to use them. But you will have champions in other departments. Get them to advocate for you. That's really important. And celebrate success. You've got lots of material that's worth celebrating. Some of it's out on the tables there. I bet you show that in your archive centres or your offices, don't you? It's brilliant. How often does it get shown in the town hall or in the Senate building or wherever it might be, you know, in the corporate headquarters? Showcase it. Use the corporate websites. We've got something running on our website at the moment. This is the City Council's website, and it's a blog, but it's a 19th century blog. And it's the diary of a Victorian clerk who lived in Pimlico called Nathaniel Bryceson. And he wrote a diary called The Life and Loves of Nathaniel Bryceson. And he was a bit of a racy guy, actually. And so what we're doing is every day we're publishing a day of his Victorian diary. And you can get an RSS feed from it on our website as well. But it's attracted massive interest. One day he was going to a hanging at Tyburn, the next day he was off with a girlfriend in Covent Garden, and the next day another girlfriend somewhere else. He was quite a racy guy. But it's just a simple thing, and it's attracted a lot of interest. The diary was transcribed by our volunteers, so we're getting sort of lots of brownie points all the way around for that. But it's about celebrating that, and that has triggered people coming to us and saying, oh, what else have you got about Pimlico? You know, God, it was bad then too. It's using that sort of thing to your advantage. So motivating people, your staff, your volunteers, to be your advocates and champions. Your volunteers, we talked about customers, your volunteers, are they all old people? Or have you got a really good spread of volunteers? People doing work experience, people developing skills, students, people from minority communities. Have you thought about unemployed people who are desperately trying to get work? Are they reflected in your group of volunteers? Or is it just those nice little old ladies? To stereotype it hugely. But if they are that broad spectrum, tell somebody about it. Tell somebody that matters about it, because that's really important. And I think the next bit is about this report, this fantastic document. You've all read it, I'm sure. You can all quote it. What did your vice-chancellors and chief execs make of it? Because they were sent copies direct. Do you know? Do you know if they've seen it? If they read it? What's the swine flu thing? You know, seen it, read it, binned it, or whatever. Did you do anything to help them to understand the relevance of this slim but beautifully written document in the pile of stuff that lands on a chief exec's secretary's desk every day? Or did you just think they'd work it out? What have you actually done to help them interpret the significance of this? And you're all looking a bit worried and embarrassed now. I mean, what I would expect someone to do would be to say, OK, we've got this great thing from TNA MLA. We know it's gone to the chief exec. He's probably passed it on to Director X. I'm going to do a little briefing note just saying what I think we should do about this. Because if you look at the action points for the chief exec, he's going to need a prompt, or she's going to need a prompt to do something about that. And that's your challenge. You've got to do that. And actually, it's quite interesting. In the actions for archives managers, it doesn't actually say kick upstairs to get them to do something. And maybe that's a trick we missed, or it was perhaps a bit too blatant to put it in the document. But actually, it's no good just assuming that he's going to do something with it, because it's one of 300 letters that have arrived that day. And he hasn't got time. So you've got to take the initiative and make sure he understands the significance of it and why it matters now, what difference it's going to make to the problems he's trying to deal with. So it's back to that relevance bit. You are the advocate, nobody else. Efficiency is my third bit. I think it's really important that you think about the benchmarks that you're using to measure your service. Don't get hung up on how many kilometres of records you've got or how many cubic metres of this and what backlog of that. Because, yeah, you might need that to manage your operation, but nobody cares. What matters is the outcomes that you've got and emphasising the value, the very low cost that you are. You're not expensive. So what's the value that you're adding? There's no point in cutting something that isn't making a huge difference. But if you're cutting something that is going to impact on the outcomes of the council, that's really important. So make sure you've got those statistics that demonstrate your impact on the outcomes. And make sure you've got anecdotes of the difference you've made to people and communities. Because sometimes the stats only tell part of the story. Telling how you changed somebody's life or got them a job because of their work experience is really important. Because if we cut the whole of the archive service, it ain't going to make much of a dent in the 25% reduction in public expenditure. But it's a chip on the way, so you need to prove that you're adding value. And I think this is where the partnering bit comes in. You know, partnering with other organisations, with other departments, further adds to that efficiency agenda. And now is the moment to go large on that, as they say. Now is the moment. The fourth theme I wanted to just emphasise was innovation and development. I know it's a difficult time. The best organisations are never complacent. They're always innovating and developing. And the most important time to innovate is in a recession. You will not survive if you don't think differently and think outside the box and think what the next big idea is. You will not survive. Even the best will never sit back and say, we're at the top of the tree, because there's only one way to go, unless they've got that next innovation and development. So that's really important. You're going to talk about new models of delivery, I think, later this afternoon, so I won't say any more about that, but you need to be thinking about it. And some of those issues are coming out in a programme that's going on in London, the Heritage Change Programme Experience. But I just want to end with the confidence challenge to you. What I've tried to say is that you've got to make the service relevant. You've got to lead and advocate for it. You've got to drive for efficiency and improvement. And you've got to innovate and develop for the future. And it's about confidence. I suspect that there's some football manager somewhere at the moment talking to a group of blokes, grossly overpaid blokes, about confidence. And I just echo whatever it is he's saying. But whether they win or lose, you are going to win because you are all passionate about your services. You have got fantastic resources. You're the person that's going to make the difference. And in the best traditions of sort of management conferences, I just want to finally end with a couple of management guru quotes for you. One is from an American guru called Rosabeth Moss Cantor. I don't know if any of you have ever read any of Rosabeth or had the privilege of listening to her. She is an amazing woman. She helped Obama in the Obama campaign, but she's been around in the management sphere for a very long time. And in 2005, she wrote this book called Confidence, and it's about organizations going through decline and boom and all the rest of it. And what she's saying is that the ones that come through are the ones that are confident. And this, I thought, was quite a nice summing up of what confidence is actually all about. And what confidence does, it helps you take control of circumstances. But it also helps your team take control of circumstances. Because if you're not confident, your team will be worried. You've got to be confident and lead your team. And you've got to be confident up into the organisation and say, hey, we can do that. We can make savings for you by doing things differently. But we can also achieve these outcomes that you're trying to do. You've got to have that confidence. Because it starts with you. And the final quote I've got is from my chief executive, who said this a couple of weeks ago at our senior management conference, which was basically, do you want to be victims of circumstance or creators of opportunity? And I know where I stand on that.
This event was recorded live on the 23rd of June 2010 as part of the Archives for the 21st Century in Your Region conference. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.